Morning all, and welcome. Representative Hansen, you have House File 1926 that has been pre-filed for this coming up session. And just to let folks know what I anticipate our schedule to be at the beginning of session is on the first day we come in, we do not have a hearing because we don't come in until noon, and we would not have a committee in which we could vote. But on Thursday, we will have the LCCMR bill, and I expect we'll get through that and hopefully begin with the Heritage bill, which will bring us to Tuesday. And Tuesday, we will finish the Heritage bill, and then we will have an update from the agencies on the pollinator. No, that's not the pollinator. Update from the agencies on the water. We asked for a report from DNR. They did a very nice report and on the implementation of groundwater, what our next step should be. Very well done. It's not long. I hope folks get to read it beforehand. And we'll do that, and then on Thursday we will hear an update from the agencies on pollinators, so on what has been accomplished pursuant to our legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lissart Sands will be moving from here to the Legacy Committee, is that
yes.
Plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We will get it done, I expect, on Tuesday. After we come in. So those would be our first. I would like to make sure they get done because we will have some substantial work to do with unsessioned proposals that will also come up. So any other questions about where we're going? I don't see any. With that, Representative Hansen, if you would like to start and review the bill, or how are you? Tell me how you're going to proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I guess I can't move House File 1926, but we'll talk about it. And I have here with me the chair of the Outdoor Heritage Council, David Hartwell, who's going to give a few comments on the bill, and then let Heather Koop, who is now the assistant director of the council, to walk through the bill and the appropriations so folks have questions, we can go through the bill. I do want to just make some general comments about the bill. We introduced it during the pre-session, Representative McNamara, Representative Lilly, and I would invite other members of the committee or anyone else who would like to co-author, we could sign you up for the beginning day of session. And I think this bill is a product of a lot of work. It's a unanimous recommendation from the Outdoor Heritage Council, and I think it's maybe the first time we have a recommendation over $100 million. So it's a very large bill, probably the largest spending bill we'll have this year. So a lot of effort, a lot of time. After the controversy last year, I think that this bill has a number of good components, and we look forward to answering any questions or any suggestions that the committee may have. So with that, start.
Great. Yeah.
If I could just ask, it seems to me when we start to go over the bill, would you want questions as we go along? That might be easier since we are.
Certainly easier for me.
Okay.
Well, members of the committee, thank you for letting us be here today. I want to just spend a couple minutes talking about the process and highlighting one of the projects that you'll hear about from Heather.
Please say your name for
me. I'm sorry, David Hartwell. I'm the chair of the Lissart Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. I'm really here to answer your questions more than anything else, but I do want to just give you a general idea of the process that we've gone through to get to this point. We put out a request for proposal last spring and had many different proposals that came to us over the summer. Ben had a series of processes to get us to the point of actually hearing many of the proposals, most of the proposals that came in. Ben went through the continued process of figuring out how much to allocate to each one of those that we thought made any sense to recommend to you for funding. This was not a short or quick process. Some of you, I know, sat through some of that and saw that we spent many days going through to come up with a recommendation we were happy with. One of the things that we put in our request for proposal, because we know it's an issue in the state, is the whole issue of aquatic invasive species and how to handle that. We had several proposals that came into us that we heard, and in conversations with the council, it became very clear to us that none of the proposals felt like they were hitting the mark. And staff and I put together an alternative to present to the council to try to get some traction on AIS, because it truly is a very concerning issue in the state. That proposal was to put pilot projects together around the state in a program to be run by the Initiative Foundation, who has deep experience in water issues. And the council has included that in its recommendations. We took a very comprehensive approach, and they took a very comprehensive approach in putting together the work plan, which was, instead of just asking boaters to do the right thing and stop and inspect their boats and get them inspected, to really look at a watershed by watershed comprehensive, how would you tackle this problem so that there's a chance of success? Because what we know is that by asking people to do the right thing, there is no chance of success, because it only takes one to mess the thing up. So it fell outside of our normal process in that we didn't have a specific proposal that matches what came in, but as we have done our work in the past, we've taken proposals that have come in and asked for them to be modified so it fits in that mold. But I wanted to point that out as something, because if you haven't heard, somebody will probably ask you about it. And we'd be happy to answer any questions about that. But this proposal to you goes from one end of the state to the other. It has forestry projects, it has prairie projects, it has water projects. It's pretty well will cover all corners of the state. But I'd like Heather to go through and explain what's really in the bill itself, and please ask any questions at any time.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Heather Koop. I'm the Assistant Director of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. In your packet, we provided a summary of the bill recommendation, and I just want to point out a couple of things in it as you have time later today or in the future to read through it. In this bill, there are 42 funding recommendations totaling $108.62 million. The majority of that activity, over 63%, is in enhancement and restoration, which incurs no PILT liability. The majority of funding, about 72%, is in acquisition, and of this amount, 66% is for fee acquisition and 33% is for easement acquisition. The PILT obligation contained in this bill is approximately $239,000. There are four entities included in this bill, which will hold about $1 million in easement stewardship funds for ongoing monitoring and enforcement of those conservation easements. As Chair Hartwell mentioned, there is a pilot program included in this bill for $4.04 million to study the best practices around containing the spread of aquatic invasive species. This bill will also produce approximately 41 full-time equivalent positions divided between state government, non-governmental organizations, and local units of government. I want to point out, too, that we spent a lot of time talking about the acres and the funds associated with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and perhaps not as much attention paid to outcomes. And so I just want to draw your attention to some of the very significant outcomes that will be associated with these programs, including improved aquatic indicators, remnant prairies and wetlands that are perpetually protected, protected, restored, and enhanced habitat for migratory waterfowl, upland birds, and species of greatest conservation need. Forest lands will be protected from development and fragmentation. Wetland and upland complexes will consist of native prairies, restored prairies, quality grasslands, and restored shallow lakes and wetlands. And core areas will be protected with highly biologically diverse wetland and plant communities, including native prairie, big woods, and savanna. The majority of the activity and funding contained in this bill will be focused on the prairie and the prairie transition areas of the state, and they support the goals and objectives as outlined in the Minnesota Prairie Plan. Of this amount, about 2,000 acres of native prairie is anticipated to be acquired, and 7,000 acres of native prairie will be restored and enhanced, contained within these recommendations. The forests in the state will also be affected and are anticipated to see approximately 42% of the activity and 29% of the funds. Significantly, about 12% of the activity will be in the metropolitan urbanizing area, and it constitutes approximately 17% of the funding. Please be aware that this does not include a new program that's being funded through the Outdoor Heritage Fund, Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, which is recommended for a little over $4 million and will be dedicated to programs in the metropolitan area as well as in communities of 50,000 people or greater. Also contained in this bill will be approximately 140 miles of shoreline that will be restored, enhanced, and protected. The kinds of organizations doing this work is probably the broadest that we've seen, and they include 3 park units, 3 watershed districts, 1 conservation district, 4 counties, 1 tribal government, 2 state agencies, and 13 non-governmental organizations. We continue to see the effectiveness of ongoing program investment, and of these recommendations, about 73% are ongoing continuations of existing programs. I think it's important to note as well that conservation gets done not in a vacuum, but by collaboration and partnership, and 25% of these programs involve one or more entities working towards a conservation goal. And finally, 11 programs are going to be leveraging approximately $35 million, which is a quite significant non-state investment coupled with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This handout also includes a number of tables and a listing of organizations. If you have any questions on that, I'd be happy to answer it. But with your permission, I'd like to walk through the bill at this time.
Let me just start off with something here. And I'm looking at, because they'll be divided between, trying just to pull your stuff together here. The majority of activity is in enhancement and restoration. And then I am concerned about native prairies. I think we don't know whether our activity at this point will make sure that we can hold them into perpetuity or not. I mean, that science is not conclusive yet. But so it's 7,000 acres of native prairie out of the 54,000 will be enhanced? Is that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the 2,000 acres of native prairie that's anticipated to be acquired is out of the entire acquisition.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I see that's going to be acquired. So, but I'm looking at the next 7,000 acres of native prairie will be restored and enhanced. That's 7,000 out of the 54,000. Am I correct? correct about that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the 54,000 acres is the combined total of all acres to be acquired, protected, and enhanced.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if you look at the in my chart here.
It just says enhanced and restored. It doesn't say acquired, but that's acquired too.
The protect with fee, protecting fee with tilt and without tilt and easement is the acquired portion.
I was just looking at the first bullet. The first bullet says enhanced and restoration. So I'm just not reading it correctly. I can see that. So
if you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Right. If the total number of acres to be affected is roughly 54,000, of that 54,000, about 34,000 is to be restored and enhanced.
Okay.
So if you look at the 34,000, 7,000 of that number is how was the native prairie acres to be affected.
Okay.
And if you prefer, I can present this information in a different way.
Help us out with what's the rest of the restoration. If it's not in native prairie, what other kinds of activities for the remaining 27% or 27,000 acres? What would we be doing there?
Chair, members of the committee, that would be all other restoration activities. So that can include grasslands, it could include wetlands, forests, and other kinds of upland habitat.
It would be good to break that out so we could see proportionally what will happen there.
Yes, and
we can do that for full committee, but I think.
And if you look at the table on page 4, it breaks it out by constitutional activity. So our constitutional areas, the wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitats. And so it is broken out that way.
Okay.
But I'm certainly open to suggestions of other ways in which you'd like the information presented.
No, that's a good presentation. We'll just be thinking about it.
Okay. The second section of the bill describes the recommendations before you. The first subdivision can list the total appropriation, which is $108,620,000 in total. Of that amount, in subdivision 2 is directed towards prairies, that's $37,435,000 in total. The first appropriation is 2A, DNR Wildlife Management Area and Scientific and Natural Area Acquisition. This is phase 6 of this program. There's $8,145,000 dedicated to this activity. I want to draw your attention to three things in this appropriation language. One is the dedicated amount of $4,250,000 is for the Vermilion River Wildlife Management Area acquisition, which is in Dakota County. Should that acquisition not come to fruition, the rider language directs the DNR to use those funds to acquire alternate parcels for wildlife management area purposes within the Seven County Metro Area. The council's also included a number of these prairie subdivision appropriations language that requires that lands acquired with this appropriation may not be used for emergency haying and grazing in response to federal or state disaster declarations. And it also directs the DNR and others to give priority to the acquisition of lands that are eligible for the Native Prairie Bank under Minnesota Statute Section 84.96 for lands adjacent to protected native prairie. 2B.
Excuse me, we have a question from Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question does relate to the language about haying and grazing. This occurs in the bill a number of times, and I guess I would like to have some explanation of the reasoning behind it.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, the council felt very strongly that haying and grazing as a conservation tool is a really good good response for a number of different situations. What this language does is it contains the use of that activity for emergency purposes, but again, does allow it for regular conservation purposes.
So, Madam Chair, thank you. I guess I don't understand why it would be restricted and not perhaps some permissive language where if emergency cane grazing occurs that they could come back to the council for approval or something like that.
Chair Wagini is Representative Torgelson. I think the council's feeling on this is this money is specifically for habitat protection and opening up lands that are purchased for habitat protection to emergency grazing is not consistent with the purpose of the funds. But there are times where there's a real conservation value to having hay and grazing, and it's easier to graze than burn and some other things. So we wanted to be consistent with the purpose, and that's why we specifically identified conservation purposes but not emergency grazing, because that didn't fit. And we talked about it with the purpose of habitat protection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my concern is that in a situation where we have a declaration of emergency haying and grazing, that someone would say, well, then we have to put a stop to all haying and grazing, and some permissive language in here allowing the council to approve haying and grazing in the times of emergency declaration would eliminate that problem.
I think one of the things we will have to discuss in this committee, and that's a good discussion for as we go along, is that a role of an advisory committee to make determinations once the language is passed, the language would then law, can an advisory committee actually be the administrative body, or is that really DNR? My suggestion here is that that's the thing that we have to think through. Because I'm looking right above here, it says a trail alignment and type for development of a recreational trail must be submitted for approval. It does seem to me that we run into a sticky wicket here of responsibilities of advisory committees versus the responsibilities of the administration. This looks like an administration issue to me rather than an advisory committee issue. So this is something, Representative Hansen, would you want to comment on that?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, if I'm trying to make sure I understand your question correctly. If you're saying, okay, we have a tract that has a management plan, a conservation grazing management plan, and then there's an emergency declaration, you're worried that then that management plan would have to cease.
That's certainly one of my concerns.
So that's your concern, the way that it's written, that it could have an unintended effect of stopping the management, versus what I think the intent of the council was if you have a tract of land that is not being, does not have a conservation management plan, or the conservation management plan grazing is not being implemented, but all of a sudden with a declaration you can start grazing. I think that gets into what Chair Hartwell was saying, is then you're getting a declaration which says that the need is for providing forage doesn't meet the constitutional test of protecting the habitat. So you're starting something through the declaration, versus what I'm interpreting you saying is you're concerned about the stopping of the grazing if there's a declaration. Am I reading you right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, on your first point, you are reading me right. Now, the second point, I think I need more information as to just how this would all work. I'm always a little nervous about doing anything in perpetuity that where we tie people's hands. As to the Chair's question about who has jurisdiction, that's a separate question that does need to be discussed.
I think that's one of the reasons we're doing this hearing today, to bring up the questions so we can get them discussed here today, so as we get to session, we can move the bill along appropriately. So this is the day for those discussions. Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. Representative Hansen, there's 14 references that I can find in this bill referring to the grazing. And I do have some serious questions about that. In the past, I don't remember this language being in previous bills. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, that's my understanding. That's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then, I guess one of my concerns then is that if we start this practice now, what does this do to the lands that have been acquired with the Lessard Sam's funds in the past?
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, I believe the reason that this particular, the way it's written it is, where it's in the session law relating to those appropriations, is that the prohibition would affect those appropriations going on. And it's going forward with these particular things rather than changing the statute to which would affect ongoing management of existing purchased land. So the way that's written per actual section is to prevent, I think, what you're concerned about of going backwards. This is to deal with these exact provisions going forward with these appropriations. And just so this is with this appropriation, we're in an annual cycle. So if this is a process, if it's a provision that wants to be continued or not want to be continued, it would be put into session law with those appropriations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, I don't know exactly where all of the acquisitions are going to be made, but I do have a number of cattle producers in my part of the state. And at a time when grazing becomes more and more difficult, it just seems to me that we're putting the brakes on some land that could be of value, particularly during the time when it becomes most critical that grazing lands are available to cattle producers. And so for that, I have some reservations. I do have a question for Mr. Hartwell, if I may, Madam Chair. Thank you. You said it was the feeling of the council. We talk a lot here, and Chair Wagenius is a big advocate of science. Where is the science in this feeling that the council came up with?
Chair Wagenius and Representative Fagan, are you talking about the AIS?
No, I'm talking about the grazing.
We actually had a lot of testimony from DNR and others regarding grazing. We also talked about the purpose of the fund, and our charge is to protect habitat for wildlife. And so the feeling may or may not have been the right word, but the intent was to be consistent with the purpose of the funding, which is to protect and restore, enhance, and protect habitats for wildlife. And so we spent a lot of time talking about that and trying to understand what the current laws would do, came up with the recommendation to you to specifically identify grazing for purposes of management plans and science, and excluded for emergency grazing only purposes, which didn't feel consistent with what we were charged to do, which is look for habitat.
Okay, well, I understand what you're saying, but I don't get the connection there between the preserving of the habitat. If we are grazing on it up to a certain point, a disaster is declared, and then we stop the grazing. I guess I'm missing that connection.
I think the question that you're asking is really about the timing of the grazing. When a declaration comes, when there's a habitat plan for grazing, there's specific time frames that it's advantageous and non-advantageous. Emergency declarations don't consider the timing on the habitat itself. So there would be times when you could have a declaration and it would be completely consistent with the management plan to go in there and graze in that period. there are other times where it would be detrimental to wildlife, and the management plan would be excluding grazing in those periods. And so we didn't want to, the timing is really the issue in terms of when to graze and when not to graze. There are certainly times when there could be an emergency declaration, and it would be consistent with the management plan to go in and graze at that time and advantageous to do so. There are other times where it would be a disaster from a habitat standpoint.
There is another layer here, too. We have, in this committee, talked about pollinators, and I know that the current law says that that we did last year was to put additional forbs onto the land to make sure we had habitat for pollinators and to cover the whole season. And now, if we are also protecting pollinators, grazing might not be appropriate at a time when there are not other things for pollinators, including bees. So we have some real conflicting missions here. And I hope as you are explaining this in the future that the pollinators also come into play, because I know that you all did spend some quality time talking about the pollinator issue. Am I correct about that?
Chair McGinney, you're absolutely right. That would be part of any management plan. You know, the pollinators are required to be considered as is other wildlife. So that would factor into when it would be appropriate to allow grazing and not.
If I could just go back to the Constitution, there in the constitutional language that we're talking about, it says habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. Game, of course, is the things we shoot, but that is in contrast to wildlife, which it would include bees and other pollinators. They are wildlife. So that we made in the Constitution a very specific distinction between game and other wildlife bees. So this, the habitat is for them, and we are enhancing that habitat with the language we put in last year. Are we seeing that in a similar?
Absolutely.
So yep. we are seeing that in a similar way. So that's Representative Babian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, to that point, then, if all of a sudden we become enlightened about this constitutional question, then what's to prevent somebody from going back and doing the, putting these restrictions on lands that have been purchased for WMAs and other things on the purchase that have been made in the past? I'm kind of new around here, but how many of these have we done in the past years?
I think that's an appropriate question for our testifiers, not for me.
Well, Madam Chair, you were the one who raised that point just now.
Raised, not the point of how many lands that have been purchased under here.
Well.
The point I raised was in the constitutional language and what it means, and we are just, I think we've all had that language before us, and sometimes it is helpful to be reminded of what the language means. Representative Anderson is next.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I strongly agree with my colleagues who have raised this point. It's a slippery slope. We haven't seen this before, and it's in this bill 14 times, so it's a strong statement in this bill. And I don't see any permissive language here. I see just thou shalt not graze or hay. And talking about timing, if a disaster declaration is made because of drought, that's usually later in the summer when it's dry and hot. The nesting season is over. I don't see a conflict there. So again, I'm uncomfortable with this language. We need to look at this again.
Representative Klein is next.
This isn't quite on this issue, so I don't know if you're ready to move off it. But one of the principles that I've had, and I know there's only a tiny little bit of land here that's accessible for PILT funding, but I know that some of the problems that we've had with acquisition is places that are very reluctant to have money taken off the tax rolls, which we don't have when we deal with easements instead. But one of the principles I've expounded ever since this started, and I would like to go into it in more, not necessarily in this bill, is that anytime we've acquired legacy land, land with legacy funds, anything we do to that or with that, I think, is not supplanting but supplementing. I think once we've made that initial acquisition. So I would take the attitude that you could make PILT payments on land that's been acquired with legacy funds. Now, I understand that the Attorney General has expressed reluctance about this or opposition to it or something, and I noticed that there's only a small amount in that bill, but that's something that I would like us to look into and specifically get that, because again, I think once you've made the initial acquisition with legacy funds, I think anything you do to that is clearly continuing on that, is clearly a supplementing and not supplanting. So I just want, not necessarily for this bill, but I want that issue out on the table for us to look at further.
Before we go on to the next one, since we are on the first one and it raises all the questions,
were you concerned?
Yes, I think so. Unless anyone wants to comment on that.
I didn't. Oh, well, maybe I did. Would you like to comment on this?
No, just on this section.
Okay. I'll do one and then you can do one.
Okay.
One of the controversies I understand is about acquiring land that will continue to be mined. Is this in this section or is it in some other section? Because I don't see language to that effect that, but I, help me out here.
Well, Madam Chair, and I would bring the committee's attention to the Lyons 2.11 down to 2.18, actually 2. All the way through the trail there, but it's the Vermilion River Wildlife Management Area addition. And this is a property that is next to the Umore Park that was purchased several years ago in connection with the Gopher Stadium. And there's this property that is along the Vermilion River, and there is currently an aggregate mine that is operating by Semstone. And I think we have an accomplishment plan that we could get for folks. Heather, would you like to go into more detail on this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the company Semstone will be operating a gravel mining operation, which they currently do so on this property. And the plan is for the aggregate mining to continue for 10 years. It will not all be mined at one time, a 400-acre parcel, but rather in sections and then restored subsequent to that. The agreement that, my understanding with the Department of Natural Resources, who's negotiating the deal with Semstone, is to do a very high level of restoration, which is above and beyond what is currently required under law, and to have parts of the acquisition open to the public as much as possible, that area that is not being mined at the time, and obviously the area that is being mined closed to the public for safety reasons. We have asked the department to undertake a second appraisal. The first appraisal that was done did not take into account the value of the aggregate, and we have asked the department to use funds provided through a prior OHF appropriation to do a second appraisal to take into account that aggregate value so that we have a better understanding of what the appraised value of that property is.
This is a major change from the way we have acquired properties before, and I think it needs some discussion, mainly because I cannot right now see how this fits into the constitutional language of protect, restore, and enhance. How can this be constitutional?
Chair Wagini, this is something we also spend a fair amount of time discussing for the very reasons that you're bringing them up. The thought that we could buy the property, first of all, it's going to be mined. You know, they're going to mine it, whether they sell it to the DNR now or mine it and then sell the land to somebody in the future. Gravel pits tend to be pretty good development property in the long term. So what this does is guarantees in the long term a large block of property of which the mine is part. And because of the appraisal process the DNR has to go through, it looks at the value after, not the value today, with all the gravel taken off. And so what you're really doing is buying a future value, which is what the appraisal will come up with, and knowing that it's going to be restored to a high level. Because it's part of a large block, it made sense to us. I will tell you, if this was a 400-acre parcel by itself, and you were looking at it and saying, oh, what a great idea, let's buy it now so someday it can be, you know, a wildlife area, I'd agree with you. It makes no sense at all. But because of its location and what's around it, to end up in the long term with a protected property of size made sense to us. And in terms of your question on the constitutional value, it does protect that property. It will be restored actually with Zemstone money as part of a large block.
Well, protect then, the way you're reading the word protect is just purchase land. Protect, the way I would read it, is you is entirely different. The precedent here, particularly as we consider a lot more mining in this state, the precedent here is huge. And I don't know that this is a precedent that this state should be walking down with this particular pot of money. I mean, I can see you're buying or taking an option out, which nobody's talked about, on this piece of land with state dollars. That doesn't pose the constitutional question, but with these dollars, I think it poses a huge constitutional question. And a precedent that opening this door by this advisory committee to something that can be expanded down the road by another advisory committee does not seem to be a wise move on your part. I don't think that's, I think this is a hard one to do. For those two reasons, the constitutionality, the opening the door to broadening the constitutional interpretation in the future, which is surely going to happen. I mean, folks on this side of the aisle have brought up the slippery slope. Mm-hmm. This is the slipperiest of slopes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Becker is going to be getting accomplishment plans for this particular proposal to hand out for committee members. In addition, we have DNR, and I believe there's someone here from Dakota County as well, that if there are questions about the project, they would be available.
Well, perhaps we should chat with Dakota County. I understand what Dakota County is doing around the Vermilion River, and I think Dakota County's done some excellent stuff. So That's not a critique of Dakota County at all. But why isn't Dakota County pursuing state bonding dollars for this? It would be my big question. Why are they pursuing these dollars when you're raising a question that is probably not good for Dakota County in the long run? Because then the competition for land that will be mined is going to be huge, and it will be hard on a county like Dakota. If Dakota County would like to testify, I'd love it.
Madam Chair, Al Singer, Land Conservation Manager with Dakota County. I'm not sure if I want to testify, but I'm pleased to be here this morning. Dakota County has been interested in a portion of this property primarily along the Vermilion River. And when, in fact, a previous Outdoor Heritage Council appropriation allocated some funds for exactly acquiring a corridor along the Vermilion River, that's really where the county's interest has been. We have been trying to work in partnership with the Conservation Fund and the Department of Natural Resources. Initially, when this project was first discussed, there was some concerns on the part of the Department of Natural Resources about this very issue. And in conversations with our county board, the county board would have been willing to acquire the mining portions of the property and potentially turning that over to the Department of Natural Resources when the mining was completed. In subsequent conversations with the department, they felt that they would be able to accommodate the mining on state property. There are previous examples of mining taking place on WMAs, and so there was some consistency with past practices. This has never been identified, the larger 400 acres has never been identified as part of the county's long-term plans. It really was only this area along the Vermilion River. But the county has been willing to step in and to try to be a partner in this, to try to provide long-term protection. But we felt the majority of the property was really best served by state ownership. So I don't know if that answers your questions about why the county. The county is not interested in acquiring this larger piece of property. It would be interested in protecting a portion of it, primarily along the Vermilion River. The county also has a long-term greenway plan that would create the recreational trail between Farmington and Hastings that this property was identified as a potential site. Hence, the trail language is part of the appropriation language. But that's really the county's interest in this particular piece of property.
Well, then that begs the question of, I understand DNR saying that we have lands, WMAs, obviously purchased with state dollars, on which we allow mining. It's an interesting thing, but you can do it with state dollars. But why DNR would open up the constitutional dollars to pay for lands for mining now is a total mystery to me.
Madam Chair, and I can't speak for the department.
I know you can't. I hear Dakota County's interest, and I makes a lot of sense to me. But this, the rest of it doesn't make any sense to me.
Madam Chair, I believe DNR is here and ready to answer questions.
Is this something DNR would consider under bonding language or some of its other purchase language?
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The first question related to bonding. Under Governor Dayton's bonding proposal for the DNR, there are no acquisition dollars for wildlife management areas in there. It's something we can work with the legislature on, should you be desired to do that. I think the larger question, there's two larger questions that I'd like to talk about. One is the opportunity to acquire habitat within the metropolitan area. as we've had discussions in the past, making sure that some of these dollars are spent in the metropolitan area is very important. And we wouldn't be looking at this project the way we are right now if it wasn't contiguous to the Vermilion River Recreation Wildlife Management Area that we've acquired and are working on in that area, and also the AMA that's there. It's the 425 acres that we're looking at are going to be added to, and this is in the accomplishment plan that I believe is being distributed, added to the existing 1,079 acres that we currently have. And this unit is one of our most heavily used units within the state. It's also important to realize that 200 acres of this 425 will be open for hunting this fall upon acquisition. They aren't going to be mining the whole thing. There's a footprint. We can show you maps how that will work, and we're working with the company that they will only open, I believe, there's going to be 160 acres that will be, Sempstone will be continued to allow to remove gravel from for a period of up to 10 years. They'll have a mining footprint of 80 acres or less at any given time, and will restore each 40 acres as mining is completed. So we're working with them to ensure that their ongoing activities will be minimized, but there's a couple of things that we need to make sure we're aware of, is that we're protecting the water quality in the stream as that's going on, and making sure that that restoration as that moves forward is the highest quality as possible. What you're going to see in their restoration plans, and we have a map actually that we presented to the Lessard Council, after the land is rehabilitated, or post-mining habitat restoration is going to include a short grass prairie section, an oak savanna, several parking lots for access, small parking lots, a floodplain forest that's actually protecting the floodplain forest down by the Vermilion River, and two food plots and a high-quality wetland restoration that's not there right now. So working with the company to restore the land to a high level that's very compatible to the existing unit is important to us. The challenges that we face is looking to do these kind of acquisitions within, I'll say, the 11-county metropolitan area. We need to look at unique and opportunities that we wouldn't probably pursue outstate because there are other opportunities out there. So I know it's somewhat confusing to some people to see how this is going forward, but we feel because of the proximity and the expansion of this unit, it is a high-priority unit for us to work on with the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
Mr. Meyer, you have answered every question but the fundamental one. What's it doing in the Heritage Bill where there is a constitutional language that says protect? This is not what you are doing with this particular proposal.
I believe, Madam Chair, there will be 200 acres that will be immediately protected of the 425, and the other acres will be restored as that work goes on. So we'll be working to have a restoration of this property that we feel does fit within the constitutional language.
So your position is now on mining projects, as long as there's going to be restoration, we should be purchasing mining projects with the Heritage Funds?
Madam Chair, members, we're looking at units on a case-by-case basis. In this case, we feel it is the most appropriate to get this land under state control for the permanent protection into the future after 10 years.
As you look at this on a case-by-case basis, you are setting a precedent, and the precedent is to open a door widely. And it does surprise me that DNR, who has been very protective of the word protect, has now changed its mind and is changed its mind dramatically and is reinterpreting the word protect. So that's something I think we'll have to discuss in this committee.
Madam Chair, just real briefly on that point, part of our view of protection is protecting the existing wildlife management area that's there as well. If this were to be bought by a different purchaser, we may lose the opportunity to protect that piece of land into the future, and we feel because of its proximity to the existing wildlife management area and its closeness in the metropolitan area, it does deserve the legislature's consideration.
It certainly does. There's nothing wrong with the project. It's the pot of money you chose to go after. Why you didn't choose to use general fund monies or work with Dakota County in some sort of sharing basis, because obviously Dakota County has an interest here, splitting the baby in half. I mean, there are other options, and for you to choose this option is to choose to reinterpret the word protect. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I hesitate to dive in here.
No, you don't.
But, this is not an issue I've given a lot of thought or that I was aware of before this morning, but it seems to me that they're purchasing something in the condition it will be sometime in the future. They're not purchasing a gravel mine. They're not purchasing the gravel that's going to be mined, but they're purchasing land that they know will be in a certain condition down the road, and they're protecting that. I'm trying to follow your logic. I'm trying to get a better handle on what your real concern is here. Are you concerned that we're going to start mining all over the state on protected lands, or?
No, I am not concerned. I think this is a good project, should go forward. That's not the issue. The issue is using this dollar for it and why this particular pot of money was chosen. When Dakota County obviously has an interest, would be interested in buying a big portion of it. When DNR has had an opportunity to ask for bonding money or other money to do it and apparently didn't choose to do that, it's the precedent that's being set for this pot of money.
And that's what I'm trying to understand is what do you see as the roadblock here to using these funds for this type of purchase?
The roadblock would be the definition of the word protect, which DNR has kept quite narrow up until today. And now they have expanded it immensely, and it's just it's a change in DNR's position, a substantial change in DNR's position. I rather prefer the earlier position.
Could you explain the difference? Are you saying that if we purchase lands that we can't do anything to them from the day we purchase them because we're protecting them?
No, in this case we're purchasing them, and then we're letting someone take part of that land away, which obviously isn't protecting it, and make a profit by taking part of that land away. I don't see that fits the definition of protect in the Constitution. Now,
so would you then say that we should not do any logging on any of these lands, or? Or maybe the cattle shouldn't eat the grass because the farmer might make a dollar by fattening his cattle.
I think there's a huge distinction between logging, because you take the log up and another tree grows up. You take the part of the land away, it does not grow back.
Madam Chair, you take the gravel out and you might have a better piece of property with the gravel gone. Or at least just as good.
Or maybe you're polluting the water substantially because you're taking the gravel out, which is another issue. Representative Bly has a question.
Yes, you're on the section I was curious about, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about the trail. Could I hear some more about the proposed trail here?
Madam Chair and Representative, Dakota County has a adopted 200-mile greenway plan throughout the county that combines water quality, habitat protection, non-motorized recreation. One of the identified routes is along the Vermilion River between the city of Farmington and the city of Hastings. There are no lands that have been set aside. This hasn't actually been master planned. This is a long-term vision. We believe that you can have compatible water quality protection, habitat protection, and non-motorized recreation all within the same corridor. It tends to be a little wider corridor, but we believe all of those public benefits can be achieved in one basic corridor. What the county was interested in doing here is protecting the availability of this portion of the Vermilion River for that future vision for a greenway corridor decades into the future. And that's really why the county has been involved in this process from the beginning.
So we're going to have trail and hunting next to each other is what I'm gathering. Representative Bly.
I just wanted to comment that I, living in a county that's right south of Dakota County, I've long admired your greenway planning, and you know, I think it's interesting the various projects that you come forward with, so I just wanted to hear a little bit more about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I may just to answer a couple of your previous questions, the department did submit a bonding request for wildlife management acquisition dollars in our initial bonding request to the MMB back in June. We requested $5 million. Unfortunately, that didn't survive through the governor's budget process on his capital bonding recommendations. He felt there were higher needs throughout the state. This acquisition also is more than what we're asking for in the bill. The bill is only appropriating a little bit over $4 million. The total acquisition price is going to be about $6.5 million. So we are using 2.5 million dollars of other funds, primarily RIM matching dollars, to do this. We can go back and look at possibly splitting out the mining area versus the other 200 acres and try to figure out a way, if we have funding available, to do that, and also perhaps that trail corridor, so that that's not confusing what some people may see as issues with the Constitution. We think it does fit within the constitutional parameters of the fund. But we will go back and work with the author and the council to see if that's possible.
Representative Babian, thank you for rethinking this. I mean, that trail seems totally appropriate. I mean, but there are stumbling blocks here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm feeling better all the time. Now I find out we're going to spend an extra $2.5 million on this. But of the $6.5 million project that we're proposing here, what's Dakota County's stake in this?
Madam Chair and Representative, as I mentioned previously, the county had received about $300,000 of a previous Outdoor Heritage Council appropriation for acquiring a portion of this property even before this larger property project became available for sale. As proposed, the county would then contribute its portion of the Outdoor Heritage Council funding to the DNR. Just as a partner, we have contributed county funds for, in fact, we have contributed $2 million of county funds for state lands within this larger complex as part of the partnership. And so we've always viewed that this is a joint public entity, that the county receives interest, the state receives interest, the township receives interest, the watershed district receives interest. And so that's the spirit that we've tried to attach to this particular project. And so there is $300,000 of state money that's been appropriated through the DNR to the county for this narrow corridor. The county would not be taking ownership under that scenario. This would all be just county contribution toward the larger project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hansen in here online, and there's a number of references, but 2.27, it talks about a recreational trail. What's the definition of a recreational trail, please?
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, I would defer to the DNR for the definitions because there are different types of trails. Some are paved, some are gravel, some have different uses. Mr. Meyer would want to answer that, but I would like to maybe follow up on your previous question a little bit with Dakota County and Dakota County's ability. In 2002, Dakota County citizens had a referendum and voted to tax themselves to acquire land, both and easement, both fee title and easement, for farmland protection and for natural area protection. And so there was money that was appropriated that started the program that Mr. Singer is in. That went for 10 years. Rather than going back to the voters for continuation, the county has continued the program and has continued to put money into the program throughout the county based on extensive planning that went on to identify high priority tracts, not only of natural areas, but of farmland to protect from development. So there's a history now going on over 10 years to have the county, and the county has been somewhat unique in this. Washington County followed up, but the longest running program where the county has put money forward to acquire lands or acquire easements for the dual purpose of environmental protection, but also keeping farmland in the family farm rather than having it going into strip malls, has been Dakota County. Maybe if Mr. Meyer would want to answer the recreational trail definition.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, there is no definition of recreational trail in statute that would fit this. The trail corridor, and Mr. Singer can comment on this, is going to be out 10, 20 years as that trail approaches it. We just wanted to make sure people understood that this piece would contain a trail, and we'll work with the county and also the council and the legislature to make sure that trail is compatible and fits within the county's long-term plans and also is in the best benefit of the unit as well. It could be paved, it could be gravel. One thing that I want people to realize, it will provide access not only for recreationalists, bikers, hikers, cross-country skiers, but also to get hunters out into the field as well. I view this as a perfect opportunity for some groups such as Capable Partners in the future to be out there and handicap access into the unit, things like that. I think we need to continue to think about how these lands that we're purchasing can provide multiple benefits, not only for grazing or habitat, but also to providing access and into the unit as well. Just because it's a trail doesn't mean it's unhuntable, doesn't make it unhunting. It is allowable to hunt off of a state trail and off of a state paved trail in certain cases where it's allowable. So we'll be working together to make sure our interests are represented and protected, and also the interests of the county are there as well.
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, this is not that far away. If you'd like to go out and take a look at it, or any other members of the committee would like to go out, it's a short road trip, and I'd be happy to take you out there. It's not that far away, and that's part of the attraction of this area, is it's close to a large population. Therefore, it has the development pressure that's coming on. But we have a world-class trout stream in the Vermilion River, and the state has already purchased a very large tract with the Umore Park in the Highlands area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then also it says here, just above that in lines 2.23 to 2.27, it talks about the trail alignment and the type of for development must be submitted to the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council for approval. Why is this going back to the council for approval?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that was the Chair's question about the division of responsibility between an advisory group and the legislative and executive authority. I'm going to speak personally here, I'm not speaking for the council, I'm going to speak personally, that I don't believe that the council has the executive authority. I said that during the council meeting for approval. I think that is an executive branch function.
Yep.
And I've said that during the council meeting, but Representative Fabian and members, as you know, when you put together a very large bill, there's some things you may agree with and things that you don't agree with, and you look at the composite. But I think we have legislative, I'll put my legislator hat on, and I think we have legislative authority, and this is the council is a legislative body.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just above that, it talks about Minnesota statutes. Can somebody help me out there? What are we talking about with those statutes with regards to the trail development and the land acquisition?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, the statute is in regard to the way in which the intended use of the land is to be in the future. So the land, there's always a deed restriction put on all fee title acquisition as well as acquisition by easement, and the intended use is for habitat. So any kind of a trail that would be built on the land would be considered an alteration of use, and the alteration typically comes back to the council for review as well as notification to the chairs, printed chairs in the House and in the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then one more thing on the trails. I've heard Dakota County say specifically a non-motorized trail. I'm an avid ADVer. Is there any desire, either from the agency, the Lessard Sams, or Dakota County, to have an additional trail that would be motorized?
Madam Chair and Representative, our Greenway plan specifically is for non-motorized transportation. There are a number of snowmobile trails that currently exist in this portion of the county. However, these particular trails would really be designed for non-motorized use except for emergency or maintenance purposes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what do you have in Dakota County for ATV trails?
Madam Chair and Representative, we have very few ATV trails except on private lands.
Well, I'm an advocate for ATV trails, and I think that there's certainly a place for them. I think that you can design them and implement them in what some people like to refer to as ecologically friendly ways, which I agree with. I would encourage you to continue exploring your options there. And then finally, Madam Chair, if I may, it also says there, starting on line 2.14 through 2.18, that any funds not spent on the Vermilion River Wildlife Management Area must be used for acquisition of land in the Seven County Metro Area. That gives me some concern. My sense is that Lessard Sams has some sort of a rating scale, and when they do these things, I would encourage the council to maybe revisit that and change that language somehow, or else maybe we can do it here as a legislature. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, and I'm sorry, I stepped out a couple times. And I'm not sure if you have talked about this, so let me know if I'm missing it. I can go back. I was looking at the part that dealt with the Wild Rice Shoreland Protection Program. Would one of you talk a little bit more about that? I'm interested in, I was trying to find in this accomplishment plan what it actually means. Both the purpose of acquiring the permanent conservation easements and then monitoring, what are you monitoring for in the accomplishment plan? And if you can refer me to the accomplishment plan, I'll try to find that out too.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, I'm happy to answer that question. We have not got that far into the bill yet. We're still on the first.
Oh, you're not going ahead.
Recommendation, but what I can say is that the use of the enforcement funds is to monitor the ongoing stewardship of that conservation easement. So if the land had been altered in any kind of way or its intended conservation purposes had been modified, that would be something that would be part of an ongoing monitoring and enforcement.
Okay. Madam Chair, are we supposed to be waiting until we get to certain parts of the bill? I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
Well, no, but it might be easier if we just...
Okay, I'll just wait.
...hold on that question.
Because I do want to know more details than what you just told me. Thank you.
Okay. So, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The jurisdictional question has been bounced about a bit here this morning. Do you have a plan to how we will address that sometime in the future, or are we...
Well, when you mean the jurisdictional on the trail piece?
Well, no, on whether Lessard Sams should be the one to go back to for approval of grazing plans, et cetera.
Obviously, that we are going to take this to a committee process, the committee process is open for amendments. I mean, that's. We're doing the hearing now, and I'm now thinking this was a wise thing to do just for the time-wise. Everything is open for amendment. This is it's the normal committee process. There's nothing abnormal going on here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, should we proceed through the bill then?
I think that would be a good idea. I think the questions on page 2 have been handled, and we will go on. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2B is accelerating wildlife management area acquisition. This is also a continuation of an existing program, phase 6, $10,350,000.
is to the commissioner for an agreement with Pheasants Forever to acquire land and fee for wildlife management area purposes. Do you also notice that the Hainan grazing and native prairie language is also included in this rider language? 2C, Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, Phase 5, $3,940,000 is to the commissioner for an agreement with the Nature Conservancy to acquire native prairie, wetlands, savanna, and restore enhanced grasslands, wetlands, and savanna. This appropriation also provides for the acquisition of lands to be consistent with the Minnesota Prairie Plan. 2D, Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge Land Acquisition, Phase 5, again to the Nature Conservancy, $2.45 million to work with, in cooperation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to acquire land in fee or in permanent conservation easements within the Northern Tallgrass Prairie Habitat Preservation Area located in western Minnesota. The hanging grazing and native prairie language is also included in this appropriation recommendation. 2E, this is a new program sent to us from both the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The accelerated protection of grassland and prairie habitat with reinvested Minnesota and native prairie band easements. Of this amount, $3 million is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, $2.45 million is to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to implement the Minnesota Prairie Conservation Plan through the acquisition of permanent conservation easements to protect native prairie and grasslands. Because this is an easement program, as well as the previous one, it does provide also for monitoring and enforcement of funds dedicated to that purpose. 2F, Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Water, Phase 4, $2.2 million is to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements to protect and enhance habitat by expanding the Clean Water Fund riparian buffer program. This is a joint program between the two constitutional funds to provide buffering on riparian areas. This is also, because it is in a monitoring our conservation easement program, there is also funds provided for monitoring and enforcement of those conservation easements. 2G, Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex, Phase 4, $1.43 million to the Trust for Public Land through an agreement with the Department of Natural Resources to acquire and restore lands in the Cannon River watershed for wildlife management area purposes. Hanging grazing language and a native prairie language is also included here as well. 2H is a restoration program, the Accelerated Prairie Restoration Enhancement on DNR Lands, Phase 6. $1.53 million is to the Commission of Natural Resources to accelerate the restoration and enhancement of prairie communities within wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, aquatic management areas, state forest lands, and lands under native prairie bank easements. 2I, Anoka Sand Plain Habitat Restoration Enhancement Phase 3, $1.09 million is to the Commissioner for agreements to restore and enhance wildlife habitat on public lands in Anoka, Benton, Isanti, Morrison, Sherburne, and Stearns counties. This is a partnership program, and as you can see, the amounts dedicated to each entity is listed. $155,000 is to the Anoka Conservation District, $79,000 is to Isanti County Parks Department, $901,000 is to Great River Greening, and $55,000 is to the Stearns County Soil and Water Conservation District. 2J is one of several new park programs that will do restoration enhancement in park complexes. This is to the Crow Hassan Prairie Complex Restoration Enhancement Program. $370,000 is for an agreement with the Department of Natural Resources with the Three Rivers Park District to restore and enhance prairie habitat within the Crow Hassan Park Reserve. 2K, again, a new program, Prairie and Oak Savannah Restoration along the Mississippi and Rum Rivers. $380,000 is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Anoka County to restore and enhance riparian and upland habitat in the Rum River Central Regional Park, Cedar Creek Conservation Area.
I think Representative Fabian has a question.
I
Madam Chair, thank you. Just looking, we're going through this kind of quick, at the bottom of 7 and then part of 8, we're talking about parks and so forth here. I guess I have some questions about the funding mechanism for the park reserve, the Crow Hansen Park Reserve. Can somebody help me out? What's going on here? This is moving kind of fast.
Would you cite the line?
I'm sorry, 8.5.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, I think the keywords are on 8.4 was to restore and enhance prairie habitat. So going back to the Constitution says to protect, restore, and enhance prairies, wetlands, and forests, so and fish, game, and wildlife habitat. So restoring and enhancing is a constitutional provision. It doesn't say where. It's a restoration that can occur to protect, to restore and enhance that prairie.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but my question is why isn't this coming from the Parks and Trails portion of the legacy instead of Lessard Sam's?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, precisely because of the question that I just, or the answer I just gave you, that there's nothing that prohibits the Outdoor Heritage Fund from paying for a prairie restoration in a park. The park is permanently protected in public ownership, so you can restore a prairie, and that's constitutionally, and as we've gone through this process over the last 5 years, I think Representative Murphy's committee encouraged that there be collaboration with the funds, and one of the earlier appropriations we went through on the buffers actually melds appropriations with Clean Water Fund to try to enhance each other. So you can use different pots of money if they meet the constitutional purpose. They are not exclusive of each other.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Hansen, we're talking about spending $370,000. I'm curious to know how many acres then of prairie are we going to be restoring in this project and enhancing?
We can get that for you in a moment. Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, 274 acres.
And then, Madam Chair, thank you.
And I've got to be clear, that's restoration, and then enhancement is 500 acres enhanced, so that's in addition to the 270.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I would ask the same question in 8.1, item K.
Chair, Representative Fabian, there will be 95 acres restored under that appropriation and 70 acres enhanced.
I think this is one of the strengths of your proposal this year, that there is collaboration now going on among the funds, that they're working together, because it seems to me that the bang for the Minnesota buck is now enhanced. So good for you on this.
That ties up the first subdivision of prairies. We move on now to forests. In this subdivision, $3,100,000 will be spent to protect, restore, and enhance forests in our state. First appropriation 3A is preventing forest fragmentation and protecting and restoring lake and stream habitat in the St. Louis River. $2.8 million is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a contract with the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa to acquire lands in fee in the St. Louis River watershed to be managed for fish and wildlife purposes.
Excuse me, I think there's a question here. Representative Hackbarth, did you have a question here?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like a little better explanation of this portion. The way I see this is the taxpayers are putting money towards this project, and it's being used to buy, maybe you can explain the land that's going to be bought with this money, and then that land is going to be given to another government and to manage the way they see fit. And I'm not sure if the question is for, after an explanation of what's going on here, I'm not sure if the chair wants to comment on this, or the author of the bill, or who, but I don't know that this is what the voters voted for when they voted for this constitutional amendment to be purchasing land with taxpayer dollars to set aside land for another, to give to another government. I guess I need an explanation of that. Exactly what's going on here.
Chair Wagenius and Representative Hackbart, we've spent a lot of time looking at this project. It is beautiful land to start with. It's a very unique piece of property. In terms of giving to another government, we do projects with the federal government, and you'll find several of them in this. So I don't know which government you're talking about. In terms of the tribal government, the key here is that the agreements require this being open for hunting and fishing to all people. It puts it under the jurisdiction of the state of Minnesota if that doesn't happen, as is similar to every other agreement. So it, from our standpoint, it's the same as any other project because it falls into the same requirements you know, we're doing business with nonprofits and other governmental units throughout the bill that have all agreed to the conditions that would be similar to this project. Does that answer your question?
Well, Madam Chair, when we're talking about other government entities, that's one thing. But when we're talking about a whole other government, another sovereign nation, and giving that land to them, how much control over that do we actually have?
We actually spent a fair amount of time asking that question.
Well, and that's why I'm bringing it up, because I have
a good question. We've received information, we can get you that information, that the tribal unit will see this as something that is under Minnesota state law, and they have to fulfill the obligations of the grant to that. So if they don't, there's a reversionary right back to the state, as there is in all other agreements. And they've acknowledged that and are comfortable with that. Would you like copies of all the correspondence?
Well, Madam Chair, and yes, I would like to look at that. I'm still not convinced that we're going to have any kind of control over this if we are going to be able to maintain hunting and fishing rights to this. I've not seen that in the past in other things that we've been involved with some of these other governments. So I'm very, very concerned that, and I think that the taxpayers should be concerned about the very issue that I bring up, using their taxpayer dollars to purchase their land, which I think is it state land? I mean, I didn't hear that explanation of where this land is and who owns it now.
It's a private landowner.
Right? A private landowner?
Yep.
And then turning it over to another government. I just don't see that the people voted to set this money aside to do that sort of thing.
Let us get the committee a packet that sort of goes through the why your concern, which is a legitimate concern, was looked at by the council, and we felt comfortable recommending to you that this would be under the grant agreements and under state law, open for its purposes.
Well, I'd like to see the guarantee that it is going to be open to hunting and fishing for ever.
Sure.
To the rest of the state of Minnesota.
We'll get you that packet.
Just for clarification, is this within the borders of the state of Minnesota?
Sure, yes.
It's not in Wisconsin?
No.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, to that point, Mr. Hartwell, you said that the management plan is similar to other tracts of land that we are acquiring. How is it different? How is this plan different from others?
Chair Wagenius and Representative Fabian, it really is not any different. All of the grant agreements and the requirements that we put on every parcel are identical. This is no different than any of those.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the mechanism for reversion, I think that was a term that you used.
that's part
how
of
is that used, and how long would that process take if any of the stakeholders are not holding up to their agreement?
Well, it's a legal process, so your guess is as good as mine. But the important thing is, from the state standpoint, their interests are protected. And if someone violates the agreement 10 years, 50 years, 100 years from now, the condition under which they have received the grant allows the state to go in and say, you're no longer fulfilling the terms of that grant. Either fulfill the terms or give it back. Give it to the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear, when this transaction is completed, who owns the title to the land?
The tribe will own the title to the land.
And then one more thing. You said that this is going to be open to all hunting and fishing. Are there any exceptions to that?
Wolf hunting is an exception.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, maybe to clarify on that. I want to go back again to the Constitution. So this falls under the forest section. So we're protecting and restoring and enhancing in the forest section here. This acquisition is looking at a piece of property that has unique characteristics. It's a high-valued habitat and forest property in the St. Louis River watershed. So it has some additional benefits in terms of water as well by acquiring this particular property. We have, throughout the history of the council's recommendations and the legislature's actions, the provision for hunting and fishing access is as provided by law under the Constitution. And we have funded, I believe, Anoka County, which has had restrictions on hunting and fishing access. There are statutory riders that have, session law riders that have gone on where you may have something where it's open for fishing or hunting under special hunts. So the precedent is there with other local government units, and the precedent is there on the reversionary clause. We had talked about Tallgrass Prairie earlier with the federal government. And I think 3 years ago when we went through the discussion about buying land, providing money for federal acquisition about the reversionary clause, there we had this discussion. If the federal government didn't hold up their end of it, that it would revert back. So we have a pretty strong precedent on a number of these conditions relating to this particular acquisition and others that may come forward.
Representative Hagberg.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. But this sets another precedent for taking taxpayer dollars and allowing a land to be bought and then given to another government, not just another government entity within the state. That sets a whole nother precedent. So this is a pretty important piece of legislation that you're doing here now.
Madam Chair and Representative Hackett, I would agree that this is setting precedent.
Madam Chair, if I may too, just add, Representative Hackett, you're correct that the land would be deeded to the Fond du Lac Band, but it would be held in trust by the United States government, along with all the deed restrictions and contractual obligations.
Representative Anderson, you're next.
Thanks, Madam Chair. How big is this piece of property we're talking about?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I think there's an accomplishment plan that may have just been provided to you, or 956 acres.
Okay, then the question I have not heard answered here is, if this is a sale of privately owned land, why can't the state own it?
Madam Chair, Representative, the proposal came from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, and their desire was to hold the land themselves. The request did not come from the Department of Natural Resources.
The band will do the management?
That is correct.
And so the state will not have that obligation to do the management?
That is correct.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, the band moved through the process responded to the request for proposals that anyone can apply to, and they went through the process, submitted the proposals just like everybody else, went through the questioning, and we had a lot of questions and a lot of discussion on this, and it was supported into the bill, which is in front of you today.
I would just add to follow up on Representative Hackbarth. This sets a precedent. I think there's a feeling of just a little bit uncomfortable with this, the precedent it sets, and again, something we have to look at.
Madam Chair. We'll start with Mr. Hartwell and then Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the time, and I have someone from overseas that's going to be in my office in 30 minutes, and I need to leave, and I apologize in advance for doing that. But I'm certainly available at other times. I hope you understand.
Thank you for being here. We will have a hearing on this. It's my anticipation. It will be the first, well, no, the Thursday that we have our first hearing, I hope we can start this. LCCMR will be the order of the day. If there's time left over, we'll start on this and then continue it on the next Tuesday. So we are moving at the very beginning of our session.
I'll look for the dates and do my very best. And I apologize for having to leave.
And we will have that evening of Tuesday reserved. And I would also anticipate that we will hear from DNR on their water report, which is short but very well done. Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add maybe a voice that says something about how comfortable and important I think it is that we do this prevention of forest. This is under preventing forest fragmentation and protecting and restoring lake and stream habitat in St. Louis River to the original people of this land. I feel very comfortable with that. So I just want to say that because all of the other emotions or feelings or whatever is being reported over on the other side, I just think it's important to know that there's others who feel quite comfortable with this and believe it is very justified. Again, these are the original people who had this land, so let's be clear about that.
Thank you for that, Representative Clark. I look forward to a collaboration here. I think that's a positive. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It just seems that this particular project deserves some more attention, and I would hope that the testifiers would be prepared when we come back with the bill in session to look more deeply into the details of this. Does that match up with your desires?
We just reported to you that we have now reserved Tuesday night, and staff thinking ahead has reserved the room for Tuesday night, and you are well aware that I have an ability to sit for an awfully long time.
I am well aware, Madam Chair, that you have that ability. One other question. I've been, and I haven't had a chance to look into it, but I've been hearing some reports about the Mississippi Northwoods project and that some transactions have taken place that may be of interest to us, and I would hope that we could find some time take a look back at that project also.
I haven't heard anything about that, so if you would share that, that would be helpful. We'd be glad to, in our role, oversight role, look at that. So I'm glad to do that. But let's actually, if you could chat with me about that so we have the right testifiers, that would be helpful.
And Madam Chair, I think we have a lot of the project proposers in the audience now that we can, you know, they're hearing the concerns related to any project and would be available for questions when we get into the actual session.
Would you like me to continue? Under the forest section is 3B, Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Habitat Program, Phase 5. $3.15 million is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Pheasants Forever in cooperation with the Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Society to acquire and enhance lands in Aiken, Carlton, Kennebec, Pine, and St. Louis counties for wildlife management area purposes. You'll also notice that the hanging grazing language is included in this rider as well. 3C is a new program, the Protecting Pineland Sands Aquifer Forest Lands. $1,050,000 in the second year is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire forest lands in Cass, Hubbard, and Wadena counties for wildlife management area purposes, also for scientific and natural area purposes, and to acquire land in fee for state forests.
you could hang on for just a second. I think that Representative Babian, do you have another
question? I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Under C, I maybe like to ask DNR to come down. I'm not sure who this question would go to, but it specifically says scientific and natural area purposes. I'd like to know why the specific request for scientific and natural area resources purposes, and then also what are the various restrictions and or uses that would be allowed in this area.
Madam Chair, Mr. Myers coming to the...
Madam Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Fabian, this appropriation is for some of the potlatch lands up in these areas, and there are pieces of this area that do lend itself to the SNA qualities. We want to protect some of the rare, unique features of this forest that is the remaining fragments of that. So that would be under the SNA piece, and then the other pieces would fall under the state forest requirements under the outdoor recreation area. The SNA restrictions in statute under 86A are somewhat limiting. It's to protect the natural areas of that unique feature, and the accomplishment plan identifies those. But it also does provide hunting and fishing and access as well. Motorized access would be restricted, but in this part of that area, there's really no trails or anything that are close to that. And the state forest piece of that, obviously, if you look at the purposes of the state forest and the Outdoor Recreation Act, it does provide, I don't want to say unfettered access, but it does provide for multiple recreation opportunities, camping, hunting, fishing, access, horseback riding, trail biking. There are a lot of motorized uses that take place in this forest as well, so we would utilize this within our current management plans in the area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many acres are we talking about here, Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, we're looking at acquisition of approximately 500 acres.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And can you specifically tell me what are the rare and unique features that are present here?
While he's looking it up, I can tell you there are threatened species in this area, and what was the first one? And the Blandin turtle is one of them. So we have, but that's not the only one. There are unique threatened. I wish it would come to mind, but I have seen two that are specifically in this area that are threatened. I just can't recall the other one.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, for the SNA attributes we're trying to protect, it would protect the native plant communities that are located in a dry pine woodland. This community is considered imperiled, and it's one of only 10 documented occurrences within the state. So there are significant features that we do want to protect in this area. We can provide you more information, detailed information from Peggy Booth, our scientific and natural area manager.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, one of the things that's caused concerns in my area, in my district, are the, you know, we get the SNAs, okay, I understand that. But the buffer areas that go up around them, you know, on the Rosa Lake bottom, the 600-acre SNA or whatever it is, and now there's 8,000 acres of buffer and areas of limitations around that. Do you have plans specifically for areas of limitation around these SNAs?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, I do not know the answer to that question, but I'll get that for you. It's important to note that almost 90% of the SNAs that are protected right now do allow hunting and fishing activities. It's protecting them from other types of activities that's very important to the plant and animal communities we're trying to protect. So I understand your concerns, but there are purposes of this program is to protect those features in perpetuity. So some uses are incompatible, but we try to make sure that there are compatible uses that occur whenever possible.
But to that point then, Mr. Meyer, how does creating a buffer area, an area of limitation around the outside of an SNA protect the immediate SNA, especially when it goes 2-3 miles away?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, again, as I stated, it's on a case-by-case, unit-by-unit basis, so perhaps we can get together with staff and talk about those unique circumstances in your district, or I can bring Peggy Booth here, and we can talk about it more in the committee as well, however you prefer.
Do you want to continue?
3D, protecting key forest lands in Cass County, Phase 5. $880,000 is the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Cass County to acquire land and fee in that county for forest wildlife habitat and to prevent forest fragmentation. 3E, State Forest Acquisition Phase 2, $950,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire lands and fee and permanent management easements, including for habitat purposes, in the Richard J. Doar State Forest in southeastern Minnesota. 3F, Southeast Minnesota Protection Restoration Phase 2, $5.77 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for agreements to acquire land in fee for wildlife management area purposes, scientific and natural area purposes, and land in fee for state forest purposes, and for permanent conservation easements, and to restore and enhance habitat on publicly protected lands. Of this amount, $4.8 million is to the Nature Conservancy, $970,000 to Minnesota Land Trust, and of that amount, up to $160,000 to Minnesota Land Trust to establish a monitoring and enforcement fund for those conservation easements. I point your direction, our attention as well, to the hay and grazing language is included in this rider as well. 3G is Camp Ripley Partnership Phase 4, $1.2 million. To the Board of Water and Soil Resources in cooperation with the Morrison County Soil and Water Conservation District to acquire permanent conservation easements within the boundaries of the Minnesota National Guard compatible use buffer program. And again, because this is a conservation easement program, there's a dedicated amount up to $45,000 to enforce and monitor those easements. 3H is another new program this year being funded, the Floodplain Forest Enhancement in the Mississippi River. $300,000 is to Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with the National Audubon Society to enhance floodplain forest habitat for wildlife on public lands along the Mississippi River. Should I move on to the next subdivision? Next subdivision is wetlands. There's $24 million in that. The first appropriation recommendation is A, reinvest in Minnesota Wetlands Reserve Program Partnership, Phase 6, $9.71 million to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements and to restore wetlands and associated upland habitat in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture and Ducks Unlimited. Of this amount, $645,000 is directed to DU to provide technical and bioengineering assistance. And again, because it is an easement program, there are funds provided up to $190,000 for monitoring and enforcement of those perpetual conservation easements.
If you could, what do you mean by bioengineering assistance?
Madam Chair, so an example of bioengineering, or I'll use stream bank stabilization rather than using traditional riprap, using inverted stumps pounded into the stream bank. So you're using biological components with your engineering to try to do a restoration. That would be one example, not quite specific on the wetlands, but using biology with your engineering to try to do restorations and enhancements. And I'm sure there are experts here that could enhance my definition.
Do we have a statutory definition of what bioengineering means? I'm not opposed to it. It's just that it's such a broad word right now that it seems people could do just about anything.
Madam Chair, I'd have to defer to Ms. Taylor if we had any. I don't believe we do.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not aware that there is one in statute.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, you may want to think about that as we proceed here, because if we're giving money and huge dollars without a definition of where it can go, I think we would be called on the carpet for that. So let's see if we can be more specific. I think there's probably a definition out there that would work for everybody. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We agree again.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Representative Hansen, I am concerned about the 650. You know, full disclosure, I'm a member of Ducks Unlimited. So, but I am, Representative Wagenius raised the word, she used the word broad. I'm concerned about accountability and transparency with DU. I think it gives them credibility. I think that the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota are entitled to a very detailed listing of exactly how the $645,000 is going to be spent. So,
and Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, we can get the hard copy for you, and I'd encourage council member or committee members, but also anybody in the general public, that these are all posted on the website, the accomplishment plans, the requests for proposals, breakdowns of some of the projects. There's quite a level of detail, and we can get those for you as well. So.
Four B, accelerating waterfowl production area acquisition, phase six, $7.28 million is due the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a contract with Pheasants Forever to acquire land and fee to be designated and manage as waterfowl production areas in Minnesota in cooperation with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. Four C, living shallow lakes and wetlands.
Excuse me, just a little question here. Pheasants Forever for waterfowl production. Pheasants aren't a waterfowl bird, are they?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. However, Pheasants Forever is at its heart a conservation organization, and they do work in the grassland areas of the state, and as you are well aware, with a number of wetlands and shallow lakes. And so they believe it is consistent with their mission. They're also working, as you might have seen or noticed under the forest section, with the Sharp-tailed Grouse Society as well, another upland bird species that they have great consideration for.
It works. Representative Fabian is telling me it works. So I just am right that this is not a waterfowl bird, though. I've never seen them. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. 4C, Living Shallow Lakes and Wetland Initiative, Phase 4, $4.91 million in the second year. It's to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Ducks Unlimited to assess, enhance, and restore shallow lakes and wetlands, including bioengineering, again, technical assistance, feasibility investigation, survey, and design to develop new enhancement and restoration projects for future implementation. 4D, the Wild Rice Shoreland Protection Program, Phase 3, $197,700 is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for the acquisition of land and fee, and $862,300 is to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements on Wild Rice Lake Shoreland Habitat for native wild rice bed protection. Of this amount, up to $70,000, is to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, again, for establishing a monitoring and easement enforcement fund.
Representative Clark?
So where is this located, these wild rice beds?
These wild rice beds are located in the northern part of the state. Counties to be affected include Aiken, Carlton, Cass, Crow Wing, Hubbard, Itasca, St. Louis, and Wadena counties.
And the accomplishment plan is being passed out to you.
Pardon me?
Mr. Becker just handed you a point.
But does this have it?
Plans, yeah.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, can you tell me what the concern is here in terms of monitoring? What kind of monitoring of what sort of things are you going to be looking at?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, in any kind of conservation easement, one of the concerns we have is that the conservation values as described in that easement will be permanently protected. So it's just part of ongoing best management practices. These conservation easements are monitored on a regular basis to make sure that the landowner, because the land is held by a private interest, has kept the conservation values at the forefront. So should there be any kind of alteration to those conservation values, then obviously a discussion would be had and a remedy would be sought to bring those values back to the forefront.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was interested, I mean, I have a concern for the wild rice beds, too. I think we heard some testimony yesterday when we were talking about, opening up, more mining land. And I had some conversations with people afterwards, too, who are concerned about contamination that would come from mining. And I'm just wondering, is that part of what we'll be able to be monitored here, or should there be a concern or problem with that? And I'm not sure which of those counties gets near there, if any of them do. Are any of them near the proposed mining?
St. Louis County.
And we did, Madam Chair, and we did hear that the St. Louis River would potentially be contaminated. So I'm trying to understand. I guess this seems like a good investment. I'll just try to read the accomplishment plan more and see if I can understand a little bit more. Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, Representative Clark, this is the third phase of the program. It has been very successful. They've had great landowner interest in northeastern Minnesota and the central part of the state in protecting these shallow lakes, primarily where the wild rice beds grow, or shallow bays on larger lakes. Great deal of landowner interest, and as you look through the accomplishment plan, take a look at the parcel list, and that gives you a good idea of the number of landowners interested in the amount of acreage that might be available for easement or acquisition by fee.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like 500 acres for easements and another 180 acres that are completed. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, that is their best estimate, yes, given the funds available.
Thank you.
What could be acquired?
Thank you.
Representative Bacon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one real quick question. You mentioned Aiken, Carlton counties, and so forth. Are those county commissioners and so forth all on board with this plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, if the department and the Board of Water and Soil Resources wish to acquire land in fee, it is my understanding that county board notification needs to be sought.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have just a quick question. When we give large amounts of money to various organizations to buy land and such, and they have to provide a list of acquisitions, are there any limits as to how much of that can go for administration?
Madam
Good
Chair.
Question, Representative Anderson.
Representative Anderson, I would draw your attention to the language that requires all costs associated with the Outdoor Heritage Fund be direct to and necessary for the appropriation. The Council spends a great deal of time on that issue and looking at it. Making sure that those budgets, as presented both in the proposal and in the accomplishment plans, are appropriate to the scope of work. So project managers are questioned on that. They are asked to provide a great deal of detail. For those non-state agencies, non-governmental organizations, local units of government, et cetera, who don't have a direct state relationship, but rather an agreement with or a contractual agreement with the Department of Natural Resources, all of their costs are on a reimbursement basis and have to provide the documentation that, again, demonstrate that they are direct and necessary to the purposes of the appropriation.
And, Madam Chair, to follow up, so over the 5 years that we've been appropriating money, I think in some of the earlier appropriations you may have seen percentages. We had a legislative auditor's report, I believe, in 2011. We've spent a great deal of time on this, and that the direct to a necessary for language with the reimbursement is what provides the taxpayer protection, because you actually are getting a reimbursement. You can judge that request versus across the board. We'll give you 2% or 10% or whatever. So that's where, based on the experience over the years and hours of discussion and guidance from the auditor, that's where we've come down to, and I think it does provide the protection for the taxpayer. And it's also more transparent because you can see it becomes available what was reimbursed.
Representative Berkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along those same lines, have you made any changes or what procedure are you using as far as appraisals go and to discover the appraised value of these properties?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, the Department of Natural Resources has a prescriptive of when an appraisal is necessary and at what dollar amount, so we can certainly provide you that sheet that describes in detail what those levels are of review for different kinds of appraisals given the dollar amount or value of the land.
And Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, if I could anticipate, I think what you're thinking here is it also applies not only to the agencies but to the NGOs that may be, and we could have DNR talk, but we've provided statutory guidance, I believe, over the last few years somewhat on appraisals, and maybe that's something for the next hearing to have DNR talk about how that's being implemented both for the agencies and the NGOs.
Representative Torkelson, if you will remember in our hearing 2 years or whenever, last year, I guess, we put language in about DNR signing off on easements to make sure that somebody was actually reviewing what was going on. And in LCCMR, that language was passed and is now law. But that language did not make it through on in heritage. It was somehow did not make it through Conference Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think we need to perhaps discuss that again. I think there was some consensus on our committee that accountability was a good thing.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I would add, too, that all lands acquired are either done so through the process of appraisal or through a formula.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
May I continue? 2E, Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetlands Enhancement, Phase 6. $1,050,000 is to the Commissioner to enhance and restore shallow lakes statewide. That is the end of the wetland section. I'll move on now with your permission to the habitat section. $30,190,000 is for habitats. First appropriation 5A, DNR Aquatic Habitat Phase 6. $2.56 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire interest in land in fee for aquatic management area purposes and to restore and enhance aquatic habitat. 5B, Fisheries Habitat Protection on Strategic North Central Minnesota Lakes. $2.13 million is to the Commissioner for agreements with the Leech Lake Area Watershed Foundation and Minnesota Land Trust to acquire land in fee and permanent conservation easements to sustain healthy fish habitat on lakes in Aiken, Cass, Crow Wing, and Hubbard counties. Of this amount, $1,150,300 to the Leech Lake Area Watershed Foundation and $979,700 to Minnesota Land Trust, of which up to $120,000 may be used to establish a monitoring and enforcement fund. 5C, Habitat Protection in Dakota County, Phase 5, $1.19 million in the second year to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a contract with Dakota County to acquire permanent conservation easements and land in fee, as well as to restore and enhance habitats on rivers and lakes and watersheds in Dakota County. Up to $15,000 of this amount is to the county to establish a monitoring and enforcement fund. I'll draw your attention as well to paying grazing language is included in this rider as well. 5D, Metro Big Rivers, Phase 5, $2.65 million to the Commissioner for agreements to acquire land in fee and permanent conservation easements and to restore and enhance natural systems associated with the Minnesota, Mississippi, and St. Croix Rivers. Of that amount, $600,000 is to the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge Trust, Incorporated, $160,000 to the Friends of the Mississippi River, $400,000 to Great River Greening,
$590,000 to Minnesota Land Trust, of which up to $77,000 can be used for enforcement and monitoring fund, and finally $900,000 to the Trust for Public Land. Again, the haying and grazing language is included in this rider as well. Another new appropriation is 5E, the Mustinka River Fish and Wildlife Habitat Corridor Rehabilitation Project, $2.44 million to the commissioner with agreement with the Bois de Sioux Watershed District to acquire land in fee and to restore natural systems associated with the Mustinka River located within the Bois de Sioux Watershed area. Hay and grazing language is also included in this rider. 5F, Minnesota Trout Unlimited Cold Water Fish Habitat Enhancement and Restoration, Phase 6, $1.9 million to the commissioner for an agreement with Minnesota Trout Unlimited to restore and enhance habitat for trout and other species in and along cold water rivers and streams in Minnesota. 5G, St. Louis River Restoration Initiative, Phase 2, $2.29 million to the commissioner to restore habitat in the lower St. Louis River estuary. Of this appropriation amount, up to $500,000 is for agreement with Minnesota Land Trust. 5H, Knife River Habitat Rehabilitation, also Phase 2, $1.41 million to the commissioner for an agreement with the Lake Superior Steelhead Association to enhance trout habitat in the Knife River watershed. 5A and 5J, again, are both new programs, restoration enhancement programs. The first, 5A, is for restoration enhancement in Washington County, $430,000 to the commissioner for an agreement with Washington County to restore and enhance habitat on public lands in Washington County. 5J is Worth Park Enhancements, $600,000 to the commissioner for an agreement with the Minneapolis Park Board to enhance riparian and upland habitat within Worth Park in Hennepin County. 5K is a new pilot program Chair Hartwell talked about in his opening statements that is evaluate effectiveness of aquatic invasive species prevention strategies, $4.04 million for an agreement with the Central Minnesota Initiative Fund to develop a series of pilot projects to enhance aquatic habitat by preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species. I want to point out, too, the rest of this rider language. All pilot projects must be conducted on a reimbursement basis and require a match of non-outdoor heritage fund dollars. A required evaluation of results must be funded with non-outdoor heritage fund dollars, and a list of all of the pilot projects must be included as part of the final. 5L, conservation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Referring to this K project, the invasive species, so you mentioned a match. Is that a 100%? So it'd be a 50-50 share, or is it a percentage, lower percentage available?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, the match has not been determined yet, other than the fact that the council is desirous of a match.
Some sort of a match.
Correct, and that will be outlined within the accomplishment plan, in the final accomplishment plan.
And the language seems rather broad. Are there any more specific information as to what sorts of projects that the council is interested in?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, there is a working group that has been convened by the Central Minnesota Initiative Fund that is working on that now. We can provide you with a copy of the draft accomplishment plan, which does go into some detail, but they're working in cooperation with the Department of Natural Resources, the Minnehaha Watershed District, as well as Mincola, in developing what those protocols will be and what kinds of proposals and the criteria against evaluation criteria that they'll be looking at in assessing the pilot projects that come to them for consideration.
Thank you. I'd like to see that.
Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, mine's on item L. Okay. Representative Hansen, on page 19 at the top, 19.4, 5 and 6, actually 5 and 6. This is language that I don't see in the rest of the bill, or maybe I've missed it. Talking about personnel costs and so forth, can you walk me through why that specific language is in there, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, so this is with the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, which is has a little more definition in terms of the appropriation, because we are setting up, and we have set up, so this is the fifth year, of a portion of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The DNR commissioner has the authority to distribute those dollars. So there are requests for proposals that come in for smaller grants, and that's the Conservation Legacy Program, which has been working very well. We can get you copies of those. So when you look at the personnel costs and the directed necessary, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that we have the agency, because this is a direct appropriation for them to provide the grants out, we are being specific on what may be spent, but it has direct and necessary administrative costs. And then it goes into the definition, and I think this boilerplate language has been the same language for the 5 years, where it has the 10% match being lower, 10% or the match being lower for these to encourage smaller groups who may not be able to have the capacity to apply, that they could demonstrate a smaller match or an in-kind match in order to be able to achieve those funds. So this is a little more of a unique animal. I would go back to what the appropriation that we just talked about with the pilot project for AIS. That's another where we're taking an entity to distribute money for that. It's a specific pilot project to look at the AIS aquatic invasive species issue. Here we are following through the same statutory and constitutional requirements, except for smaller amounts, so that the council and the legislature is not considering projects for $25,000 or $10,000, small things that can go through there with the conservation partners, and the authority rests with the commissioner. So if we can get the projects that have been distributed, I think I'd note that the appropriation that passed last spring, those funds, the demand was high, and we've already the DNR has already distributed or awarded those grants. It's a very popular program.
And Madam Chair, Representative, I would add too that language under starting on 19.2 to 19.5 talks about total project costs not exceeding $575,000. And that was an effort to keep these grants within the spirit of the program, so that you don't have larger complex programs coming forward to ask for just a portion of a much larger project, but rather that they are dedicated to smaller, you know, on-the-ground projects within that dollar amount.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just reading through this, skimming through it, looking for invasive species, all I see is aquatic. Is there something in there for the terrestrial, as we're dealing with prairies and forests as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, yes, indeed. I think if you took some time and looked through, particularly the first subdivision under prairies, you'll see a lot of attention being paid to fighting terrestrial invasive species as part of the on-the-ground conservation management practices, whether through, you know, hazing and graying and burning. They're doing some really very interesting work in trying to control these invasive species.
Good question.
And Madam Chair, maybe if I can go back to Representative Torkelson's question a little bit on the AIS and the pilot project. And the discussion and the debate in the council was looking at, this is a huge issue, and we're the clause that's the constitutionally appropriate clause is the protect, restore, and enhance fish habitat. So how do you do that, and how do we appropriate money so that someone can apply and protect fish habitat? We can evaluate that. One group that came forward with through the normal process had a proposal where you have a lake that may be infested with zebra mussels, and you implement practices on that lake to prevent those invasive species from getting to another lake. So kind of a containment strategy. And then others had proposed almost a barrier strategy to prevent things from coming in, boat washing. So There are a variety of tools that may be able to be used, and how do they work? And the idea with it being a pilot project here is to encourage, and we had the lake associations, we had Minnetonka Watershed District, we had folks coming forward saying, we have an idea of how to try this. And we think that we'd like the funding to make sure we can implement something, because right now we've appropriated money through the general fund appropriation to the DNR. There is an interest and a hunger, both from local governments but from local lake associations, to try things. And to meet the constitutional requirement of protecting fish habitat, we felt it was important to incent through a pilot project to try some of these different methods. Maybe it's a containment strategy, maybe it's a barrier strategy, maybe it's other things in order to try to find something that works.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this topic, the Central Minnesota Initiative Fund, if I am familiar with that, it's not coming to mind. Can you describe what it is?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, that's a nonprofit funding opportunity, or a organization that has experience distributing grants, and Ms. Coop could give us a little more detail.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it was one of several regional initiative funds set up by McKnight Foundation, probably close to 20 years ago now, to set up to do local community building. Central Minnesota Initiative Fund is located in Little Falls, Minnesota, and takes care, the purview is that part of the state. The Vice President, Don Hickman, who is the project manager for this position, has a deep interest and professional acumen in aquatic biology, and has worked with a number of stakeholders in that area working on aquatic invasive species issues.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that means then that these funds are available only in Central Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, no, it does not. It will be a statewide program.
Thank you.
You want to continue?
5L was mentioned, Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, Phase 5, $4.55 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for programs to provide competitive matching grants of up to $400,000 to local, regional, state, and national organizations for enhancing, restoring, and protecting forest, wetlands, prairies, or habitat for fish, game, and wildlife in Minnesota. 5M is a similar program put forward by the Department of Natural Resources, a new funding competitive grant program. It's called the Conservation Partners Legacy Metro Grant Program, and there's $4 million recommended to provide competitive matching grants of up to $400,000 again for the same purposes, but it is limited to a geographical area, a 7-county metropolitan area, or cities with a population of 50,000 or greater. The remainder of the appropriation language is the same. Conditions apply for the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. Finally, Subdivision 6, $885,000 for administration. Very quickly, contract administration with the Department of Natural Resources, $175,000 to manage all of the contracts and agreements put forth in this bill. 6B is for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. That is $570,000 to the LCC for the administrative expenses of the council and its staff, as well as reimbursement for council members. 6C is a technical evaluation panel, $100,000 this year to the commissioner to provide technical evaluation of up to 10 restoration evaluations per Minnesota statute.
This seems enormously small. I mean, we are spending $100 million. How much money are we spending?
$108 million. Yeah.
$108 million, and we believe that we can have oversight with $100,000.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that the statute, as written, limits this work to just 1/10 of 1% of the. Of the proceeds of the fund in any given year. So the top limit is bound by statute.
Statutes can be changed. I mean, this does seem, when I think of the amount of money and you are looking at 10 restorations, and how many restorations will be done?
Several hundred.
Several hundred restorations, and we're going to do 10. So that's, what percent would that be?
Very, very small, Madam Chair.
Like, I think we need a percentage of those that I think that would be helpful to have later. This does not seem like appropriate oversight to me. Does anybody else have a sense of appropriate oversight that would worry them? We'll see. We will have a discussion about this. This is minuscule oversight. Okay. Do you want to continue?
6D is a high priority pre-transaction service acceleration for the council. This is $50,000 to the commissioner to provide land acquisition pre-transaction services, including but not limited to appraisal, surveys, or title research for acquisition proposals. As we talked through the first appropriation today for the Vermilion River WMA, the second appraisal that the council had requested was being paid for out of this appropriation from last year's bill. 6E is a legacy website. This is $15,000 to the LCC for the legacy websites required under Minnesota statutes. And finally, Subdivision 7 outlines the availability of appropriations under this bill, and Subdivision 8 describes the payment conditions and capital equipment expenditures under the bill. And finally, Subdivision 9 is a mapping requirement that requires all recipients to provide the information to have the acquisitions mapped for public use. With that, I will stand for any remaining questions.
Thank you. I want to go back to the pollinator issue since that is new. I am looking at the statute that DNR is doing best management practices. And they must be used for all habitat enhancement or restoration of lands under the commissioner's control. So how does this fit in with the accomplishment plans? Because I'm looking at implementation of this language. Can you just help us out here how this language will be implemented with this money?
Madam Chair, that's a really good question. And currently under statute 97A.056, subdivision 13, part C, there is a requirement that all acquisitions must have a restoration enhancement plan that complies with best management practices, current conservation science. That would seem a really likely place to have that requirement. For all lands that are being acquired that would directly address the pollinator habitat. We certainly could also include that language specifically in each accomplishment plan as well.
I think just to teach people that there is new language, new law that needs to be understood, that having this in each accomplishment plan would take us a big step in the right direction. Is that something that is... you think is workable?
Madam Chair, most definitely. And I should also add, too, that in each contract that is delivered between the department and an NGO or a local unit of government, there is contractual language that does provide for adherence to the pollinator language statute and requirements.
I see the plan. Now, just the practicality issue. I get how this pollinator language will work in a prairie. But how do we do the pollinator portion in grasslands? I mean, when I think of grasslands, I think of brome. Am I thinking of something wrong?
Madam Chair, I am not qualified to answer that question. But I can certainly provide you with people who can answer that.
Well, I think that would be something, the forbs that would be good for the pollinators are historically have worked in prairies, and that's fine. They will work. But if you try to put a forb in brome, the brome's roots will kill it. So that's how we need to, if you could come back with how the pollinator language is going to work in the grasslands portion of habitat restoration. I mean, I don't know how you restore brome in the first place, but let's, if we could have some specificity here on how this all will work.
I'd be happy to provide you that information.
Okay. We'll have that ready for our next hearing. We have a while yet. So let's have a discussion about how that portion works. Okay. Members, anything else? I don't see anything else. Thank you all for this.
Madam Chair, yes. We could approve the minutes from January 29th meeting, so I'd make that motion.
Representative Falk moves that we approve the minutes of the January 28th meeting. I don't see any questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are adopted. I see no further questions. With that, the meeting is adjourned.